Hey everyone, welcome back to the Gary V Audio Experience. I'm Jacob from Team Gary. Today, Gary sits down with the winner of the All-In Challenge, Jose. They talk about everything from life to business to family and everything in between. And Gary wants your feedback on this episode specifically. So make sure you tweet Gary using the hashtag JoseGV. That's hashtag JoseGV. Enjoy the episode.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Vayner Nation, how are you? A very special episode of the Gary V Audio Experience. This is one that's been years in the making. As many of you remember, during the beginning of COVID, I got very passionate to team up with Michael Rubin from Fanatics to do the All-In Challenge. You know, I was worried about Vayner and my world because it was very challenging to navigate through that first batch of vulnerabilities with clients. But I knew that even if Vayner went out of business, I'd still be okay, and I needed to do good for a lot of people that were in trouble. And so I'm very honored that Michael called me, and I was a piece of the group that helped raise $60 million to feed the hungry during COVID with that campaign. During that campaign, I put myself up as one of the All-In challenges, and somebody was gonna win the Ultimate Gary Experience. And that gentleman is with me today on this show. I'm gonna let him introduce himself, tell us about his life story. I'll ask him a bunch of questions. I'll let him ask a couple questions. Maybe that might make sense. It's literally the first time we're meeting in person. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna work out together right after this. And I gotta say, he's extremely, extremely handsome dude in good shape. And so I think he's gonna crush me in the bench today. But look, I don't think we'll film that, Dustin. Make sure. But anyway, Jose, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Yeah, really happy to be here. I think you're actually, I thought it was just like so fortunate that you were the person that I having to win the event from, just because my interests are within business. And I was like, you know, everybody else, like I like LeBron and I think other celebrities and stuff were on there. But I was like, this is so applicable. I'm sure Gary's gonna have some great lessons that I can take away as somebody who aspires to be an entrepreneur himself. So yeah, I can go into like what.
Yeah, tell us like, my history, you know, for a lot of people, you did what everybody else did, right? It, remind me, you could buy like a ticket to win the raffle, right?
Yeah.
$5 or $10 each or
something
like that?
Yeah.
And do you remember how many you bought?
Yeah, I just bought one set.
No way.
Yeah.
Like $1 $5?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and that was, yeah.
I mean, that just, the Vayner Nation's thinking back to when they bought like 1,000 tickets.
Yeah.
You literally bought one, brother?
Yeah, I wasn't going to go
crazy. Yeah, I get
crazy
it.
With, yeah, yeah.
You bought $1 $5 entry.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I just let.
And did you buy like a bunch and you put them into different things?
Yeah, so I did that. Sense. I did that.
Which one? No bullshit, because it won't hurt my feelings.
Okay, okay.
Do you recall which one you really wanted the most?
I mean, I remember seeing, I think Tom Brady was on there.
Get out of here! That just put a spear through my soul. Oh, that was devastating.
And like, I told you, like, I don't really like the Patriots, but I respect Tom Brady as a guy. Like,
I get it. I like Tom so much more now that he's a Buccaneer and he's losing. Now he's endearing. He's like losing and he's a Buccaneer in the NFC. I'm like, oh, I like you, Tom. Like, forget about those 20 years of pain.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
That fully threw me off on the podcast. Tell us about your life. Tell us about who you are as a kid. Like, where'd you grow up?
Sure, yeah. I'm from LA. My family came from Mexico when I was a very young kid.
So you were born in Mexico?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But I grew up in LA, though, so I don't really remember much of Mexico.
Yeah, same as me. I came when I was 3. How old were you?
I was like 10 months old or something.
Yeah,
like. I don't really remember.
Yeah,
But yeah, most of my life has been in LA.
Yep.
I went to high school there. Worked my ass off, and then I was able to go to Harvard for undergrad, where I studied English. And after that, I got really interested in like real estate investing, partly because of all of the YouTube content that I would consume. And I wanted to, you know, get into that space.
Yep.
I think part of it was also fueled by like my dad. I think every immigrant has this American dream story of like owning a home.
Building, like a home, owning property.
Something. Yeah. So that got me really interested. And so then
let's take a way back. I apologize. We'll go back to this in a second.
Sure, sure.
That was a very quick glance of like, I worked my ass off and went to Harvard.
Yeah.
You know, Harvard's pretty legit, Dustin. I don't know if you heard. When you said you worked your ass off, classroom or because you were first generation immigrant, like classroom and fucking like a job, like sports because you're in good shape, like bring it back.
All of it.
All of it, huh?
Yeah. So it was, I think it's hard because I think I look back to those days of like, what was the hard work and what was luck? Part of it was, there was some aspect of luck because my my older cousin told me about the magnet school that I should apply to that had all the available resources for me to take advantage of. But once I had those resources, then I took a bunch of different classes, all of the APs.
When was that? What grade did you go there?
I started that, the magnet process, I think I was in seventh grade, so it would have been like 12.
So you're going to public school.
Yeah.
Cousins are like, hey, there's this magnet school.
Yeah, yeah.
You, and educate me because I'm a little undereducated with magnets. Yeah. They had to accept you or no?
Yeah, so basically all of my neighborhood schools, because I grew up in like South Central LA.
Yep.
It's a pretty bad neighborhood.
Yep.
Schools are very underfunded.
Yep.
So I knew from that early age that I was not going to get a good education there.
Yep.
And
how much were your parents pounding education?
They were very serious about it. I think for them,
but not crazy, right?
No, not overwhelming.
Yeah, because the reason I'm asking you is like, immigrants just coming over, like they have so many other things they're fucking worried about as well.
Yeah, oh yeah, certainly, yeah.
That like, yes, it's like education, American dream.
Yeah.
But like to go to Harvard.
Yeah.
Like, did your parents didn't dream of that, or did they?
They didn't know what Harvard was.
That's amazing.
I figured out what Harvard was when I was in like 10th grade. But the reason why they would push it so much is because first they wanted us to, I think they just wanted us to have a better job than what my parents had.
Of course.
So my dad's a butcher,
right.
And my dad didn't want to see us go through that kind of struggle.
That's right.
And then I would say, I also just have always loved learning.
Your mom work or did she stay at home?
No, my parents made that split very early on. They realized that if my mom didn't take care of us and she didn't have like a watchful eye over us, we could get sucked into the neighborhood, which is a reality. Like you could 100%. Get into that like gang life and stuff.
Of course.
And my mom was the one.
My parents did the same thing.
Yeah, I think it's kind of necessary.
But like we didn't, you know, Queens wasn't the prettiest place on earth where we were at the time. But, you know, Edison was like it was fucking blue collar, but it wasn't gang life.
Yeah.
And like, but it was important for my mom to stay at home and like we would give up on, you know, we didn't take a family vacation, for example.
Yeah.
We took two.
Yeah.
To the same place, Disney World. Like my whole childhood, we gave up, we didn't go out to dinner. Like we gave up the luxuries to have that ultimate luxury.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it was necessary, but I think it made us stronger, and I wouldn't do it any other way if I had it. I think there's a beauty in some of that. But anyway, so once we...
How hard was it to tune out the noise of the neighborhood during high school?
Yeah, that was...
That's where it gets...
That
like
was
when
challenging.
I look at the cliche like story, I have a lot of friends.
Yeah.
I went to college in Massachusetts, but literally the other side of the spectrum of Harvard.
Yeah.
I went to Mount Ida College, and most of my friends grew up gangbanging in high school, like good kids. That's why they were my friends.
Yeah.
But the high school years was when it was even like the most challenging, it seemed.
Yeah.
Even for the good, they would talk about kids like you. They were bad students like me.
Yeah.
They would talk about their friends that they were upset about, that Jesus, jail, murder, fucking all the shit you watch on TV and the news of like that kid was like could have easily gone to Yale, but he fucking got caught up in the game. You know, that cliche shit. How did you, were you, like what enabled you to stay on the Harvard course? Was it the school? But even if you're going to the magnet school, you're still in the neighborhood.
No, so magnet schools, you actually get bussed out of the neighborhood.
That I know.
Yeah.
But you were still in the neighborhood on
the
weekends.
When I would come back. That's
right, exactly.
Very true. Yeah, I would attribute that also to my dad. My dad, regardless of how tired he was, he would always drive me to like events that were outside of the neighborhood that my school would put on. So my track meets, my swimming meets, when I needed to go take the SAT, all that stuff, my dad always was like, hey, I'm not going to go to work so I can take you to go do your thing. So it was just, this is what I'm saying. It's like, it is hard work on my end because I was technically taking the exams and doing all this other stuff and studying and all
Did
that.
Did school come natural to you?
Yes, but I also wonder how that really works, because have you ever read Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers?
Yep.
Okay, so
I haven't read it, but I'm very aware of the thesis.
Yeah, so I think since I was an early kid, like very young, my teachers would always tell me, hey, you're a smart kid, keep going forward. But I also realized that part of that was because the month that you're born in, January, happens to also align to when your brain's just a little bit bigger than everybody else's at that age. So it means that you get a lot of like positive reinforcement. And so it's possible that I was probably, you know, and when you're that young, the little deltas make a big difference. It's possible that I just got so much positive reinforcement that I was like, hey, I'm good at it. Let me keep going. So I don't really.
Was your mom giving positive? Is your mom optimistic person?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
Was she the mother that would say to you, like, you can do it, you're the best?
Definitely, yeah. I think she went further than that. I remember having a very strict conversation with her in high school, and I was like, hey, mom, my school is getting very intense right now. I can't do my chores. I know you're, and my sisters hated me because he was like, how come Jose's not doing his chores?
But even the way he just said it was like cliche brother sister shit.
But my mom was like, no, you don't understand. Like, he's not just goofing around. He's literally looking at, like, studying all day long. She would tell your sisters, like,
he's a genius, leave him alone.
Not no, but he would say, like, he's studying all day long. Like, if you would do that, I would do the exact same thing for you.
So you're of three?
So we're four. I have three younger sisters.
I love it. Yeah. You're the oldest brother of three sisters. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really I love them.
Do you love that sense of responsibility?
Yeah. I think it made me mature faster.
Me too.
But also now, like, I don't know. I think they're my closest friends. They're the people that I can trust fully.
It's awesome.
And that's hard to find.
How old are you?
I'm 25.
And them?
So one is 24. The other one is 19 and the other is 18. So one just started college.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, she's having a good time.
But you were the outlier academically?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know where that part came from. Yeah. I think part of it is just I needed a school that would pay for my entire education.
Yeah, of course.
And Harvard was one of those places. So I was like, okay.
Did you shit when you got in?
I was in public, so no. But it was honestly like a life-changing moment. I was like, I felt the trajectory of my life just completely switch.
You just felt it.
Yeah, you just feel it. You know that life is different now.
Where else did you get accepted to?
So I applied early to Harvard.
And that was it.
And then I was like, I'm done.
Of course.
I studied so hard. I was like, I'm good.
And did like your friends make fun of you? Like razz you? Like, oh, Harvard boy. Like,
yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. But I don't know. I think all of that just comes from like a sense of like love and stuff. You know?
Of course,
yeah.
And so now you're out of it. Like, Give me the postmortem on the 25-year-old from the streets who went through Harvard for four years. What do you think?
I would say I think Harvard's difficult the first time you go around it. There, Harvard's a lot easier when you're the second generation in, and there are people at Harvard who are like 10 generations in.
Of course.
But I think the first time it's difficult because first, there are some cultural aspects that you're not really, that I wasn't aware of. Like, I didn't even know what squash was. I didn't know what rowing was.
Of course.
I didn't know what all of these cultural icon things that people connect with.
Yeah. All those bougie sports.
Yeah, so that was difficult for me when I first started. Later on, as you go through your first year, you create enough shared experiences that it becomes a lot easier to become make friends and stuff.
Makes sense.
But early on, I remember that was a big obstacle.
So that first month was fucking raw.
I would say the first, like, 6 months was tough.
First year.
Yeah, because
Even weather, right?
Weather's different, like, yeah.
That Boston bullshit weather.
Mm-hmm. I also was very used to going back.
It's the same as New York, but I just hate the Patriots so much. Go ahead.
I also was just used to always coming back home to, like, with my parents, my mom and dad. And we don't live in a very big place in LA. And I know it's like, it kind of sucks, but it's also really nice to have noise
cozy
in the house.
And loud and action,
Yeah, whereas if you just go home by yourself, the lights are off, you turn them on, it's kind of, I don't know, lonely.
So the first year was lonely.
First year was tough, yeah.
And how about academically?
Yeah. No, academically was fine.
I
think my school prepared me enough.
Got it. You had the academics.
That was fine.
The social part was just like...
It was just weird for me. Yeah, it was tough. Just because we didn't have the shared experiences. I know.
And you didn't get the luck of the draw of like another kind of non-shared experience kid. You didn't get that cliche in a movie.
Yeah.
Another kid from the other side of tracks and you guys became homies. That didn't like play out.
No, and then there's also... I think Harvard tried to connect people based off of culture. They were like, hey, this is a Hispanic kid. Let's put him with other Hispanic kids. I think I like where that comes from.
It came from good intent.
Yes.
But it's not sometimes as practical as one would think.
It's difficult because...
Yeah, I agree.
So I would notice that a lot of the Hispanic kids from like Harvard and these other schools are generally international kids.
That's right.
And those are rich kids.
No. Super rich.
They share a lot more in common with kids from here.
Yeah.
So that was like I understand where it was coming from, but it doesn't really work out that way. I actually would find
I want to hear that.
Yeah,
I
would find more similarities with like the poor kid from Indiana or like
of course
you know we would because we knew the same stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
I actually was gonna. That's where I was going. What if you had to like recap it right now? What was the breakthrough socially for you?
Yeah.
In Harvard.
I would say I started playing futsal, like indoor soccer, mm-hmm. and then I met one of my good friends who I'm actually going to go visit. We get together all the time. And then he introduced me to the rest of his friends.
So that was it. The same old story.
Yeah.
So it was that one kid and his friend group, and that became your social circle.
Exactly. Yeah. And then from then on, the 3 years after that, I had a blast. Yeah, of course. Was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, I would do it all over again. I would
as a 25-year-old. Yeah. Telling that story, and this is compelling. What can you tell? And knowing my audience, what can you tell the parent that's listening right now who has the 13-year-old, they're more like me. Mm. Scrapper, first generation, made it. And their child is actually not entrepreneur. Mm. Academic superstar. What insight can you give to somebody who's listening right now who has a 10 to 13-year-old that's going down that path, and maybe it wasn't their path so they don't have insights, since you freshly are off that path.
Yeah.
Any hot take that you can say, like, hey parent, always remember this, or consider this, or watch out for this.
Yeah, I'm actually a big fan of people who say that college isn't for everybody, because I completely agree. I think the world endows, whatever you happen to believe in, luck, whatever, I think you're given a set of talents, and people should harness those talents, and you should lean into them. So there's some people who are very talented in academics. Cool, lean into those. But there's some people who, that's not their strength. People are very creative, or people are very funny. Lean into those strengths. 100%. So that's what I would say. Don't lose hope on your kid because of that. Like, actually take the time to listen to what the kid is good at.
You know, it's funny. It's for me, it comes natural if my kid was a comedian to mm-hmm. like, you're the next Kevin Hart. If,
yeah.
You know, if they're, you know, it's actually the thing that is worrisome for me is I get a lot of emails and DMs from parents like, yo, Gary Vee, what do I do? Like, I'm like, you, bro. And this, my fucking kid's getting straight A's. I'm like, awesome. I'm like, don't let them become anxious about the grades.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's one thing.
Yeah.
Make sure they're happy.
Yeah.
But like, you know, lean into the truth, not to a parent's ideology. We speak for a lot about the parent ideology of, like, you got to be a good student. You're fucking up that your kid's an entrepreneur. Yeah. For a lot of us entrepreneurs, it's the reverse.
Yeah.
So let's pick back up the story. Real estate caught your attention. So, like, where are you at this point in your career?
Yeah, so I went back to LA. I was working for a real estate PE firm, and I was investing in multifamily and industrial buildings.
Yep.
I had a great time learning that, but I also wanted to figure out, like, I knew I wanted to start my own business. I don't really want to work underneath anybody. Mm-hmm. And I just like that ownership that you take and that risk taking. So I applied for business school. During the pandemic, I don't know if I had won the prize yet, but I got into Stanford's Graduate School of Business. And so now I'm completing my second year there.
Wow.
And I'm about to graduate. Hopefully, I'm working on a startup with a friend of mine from the Civil Engineering School. We'll see how that one goes.
Anything you can share on that front yet?
Yeah.
What's the hypothesis?
So basically, we are, well, he's the brains. He's the PhD in civil engineering.
Yep.
He created a model that will give you suggestions on how to make structural and non-structural improvements to buildings to make them more resistant against hurricanes, earthquakes, tsunamis.
Buildings that are standing now.
Both. So you can make...
Oh, even pre-construction.
Yeah, so even pre-construction. Yep. When it's pre-construction, you can make even better improvements, non-structural improvements.
Of course. You're
post,
in control still.
Exactly.
Post is fucking challenging.
It's more difficult, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But then the ROI debate and all those things, right?
All of that, yeah.
Yeah.
So right now we're doing... Stanford has this class called Lean Launchpad. And so we're conducting a bunch of interviews with industry professionals that I know. And to ask them, like, which customer, who would you think would be the ideal customer for this?
Yep.
And so I think
product
the final product
fit.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think what we're imagining is creating some sort of SaaS tool where we
Makes
create
sense.
A nice front end.
Yep.
Have the user put in the database of their building.
Charge them monthly.
Yeah.
Get value.
Something like that. Yeah.
Love that. Before we get out of here, anything you want to ask me?
Yeah. I actually have a few questions.
Let's do it. Trying to make this valuable for the listeners.
Okay.
That was fun, Dust. We should do random, like, young kids.
It's a little bit more relevant to, like, every other person.
Right? Like, we have all these, like, fancy fuckers on the show. Like, like, this is more of a journey. Like, that was cool.
Yeah.
I, like, liked it more.
Yeah, me too.
Nice. Thanks, Dust.
So I guess the question that I was going to ask.
Best, Dust. Everybody chant, we love Dust. I feel like we got to change this trend I started that I don't even like.
When you started, like, VaynerX,
yes.
What was the initial business idea, and what were some key moments as you were starting your company?
What happened was ESPN sent me an email and said, can you come into the office and speak? We see what you're doing on this, on the Twitter. Like, this is how people talk back.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's so cool. And they're like, you know, what's your fee? And I was like, fee? And I was like, and I like really was just like so excited to go to ESPN and talk to them. I was like, well, what do you guys normally? And they're like, well, you know, would you do $5,000 for the hour? And that seemed like $1 trillion. Because yeah. You got to understand, at this point in my career, I built a huge business for my dad, but I wasn't making a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so like, and listen, $90,000 a year is a lot of money, but like not compared to what I was doing. And I was 34 and I'd been doing it for 12 years. So like, this was like big to me. And I remember I went, and not only was it cool to get 5,000 bucks, I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I talked for an hour about big business. It wasn't wine. I'd been doing that for 20 years of my life. And it was just very obvious to me that, and I remember thinking like, wait a minute, I'm not that I thought that I was smarter, but I definitely felt like these are like big corporate heads at ESPN. And I'm like, wait a minute, you know, just kind of all rushed in my head of like, there's something here. Got out of the office in Midtown, New York, and called AJ, my brother. He was at BU, mm-hmm. not far from mm-hmm. where you were. And I was like, bro, because we knew we wanted to start a business together. And this must have been like the fall. So this was probably the beginning of his senior year. In May, we had a bullseye that we were gonna start a business when he got out of school, because he already knew he didn't wanna go into the wine business, the liquor business. And so we were doing things. We did this like t-shirt search engine, please dress me, and like doing all these fun things. We probably thought we were gonna do fantasy sports.
Okay.
Which probably would have been right, by the way, because we were ahead of that trend. But I said, hey, you know, this is that skill I have. You like marketing, social media, all this stuff. I'm like, why don't we just start a consultancy? That's what I called it at first, not even an agency. And we'll get paid to learn and let's see what happens. So the thesis was get paid to learn and figure it out.
Yeah.
2 years later, so I was still running the wine business. I just wrote Crush It, the book right there on the shelf.
Yeah.
That, this one right there, you see it?
Oh, this one, yes.
And that was my first book, which was basically like, hey, social media is gonna be a big deal.
Yeah.
Right? Look, even what you said, cash in on your passion, mm-hmm. right? Like the internet will make the bullshit that people thought, the hyperbole of like follow your dreams, now practical, unlike it was ever before the internet.
Yeah.
That was the hypothesis. The book went bananas viral. New York Times bestseller, went bananas. Now I'm speaking, Gary Vee is being built. Now my wine company, I'm still running, my dad's business. And now me and my brother have this company. In August of 2011, which was 2 years, 2 months after, three months after we started it, I kind of just like had this moment where it was not sustainable anymore. And I was like, I gotta decide. I was like a third. And I was like, I wanna do one thing 90% and 5% the other things. And I decided to go all in on VaynerMedia with a new hypothesis, which was, I'm gonna build the greatest marketing company of all time.
Yeah.
As an operating system to my private equity behavior.
Mm.
So instead of doing what PE does, which you know, mm-hmm. which is buy companies where they see opportunity of better management mm-hmm. and better margin,
mm-hmm.
I'm gonna buy companies where I see the opportunity to create hyper growth against intellectual property.
Okay, could you unpack that a little bit?
Sure. One day I'm gonna buy the Smurfs IP.
Okay.
One day I'm gonna buy Captain Crunch from PepsiCo.
Uh-huh.
One day I'm gonna buy Bubblicious from Mondelez.
Okay.
Take it out. And then make everybody on TikTok chew Bubblicious and quadruple growth.
Okay.
Because that's my skill.
Yeah.
So that was 2011. Fast forward to 2021, after 10 years of building a massive company, this NFT thing comes along and mm-hmm. I go, maybe I don't need to buy the intellectual property. Maybe I can establish the intellectual property.
Yeah.
And that's how VeeFriends was born.
Mm-hmm.
Along the way, I started Empathy Wines with people that worked here, sold that to Constellation for a substantial exit. I started Resy, the restaurant app,
mm-hmm.
here.
Oh, no
sold
way.
Sold that to Amex.
I didn't know that was cool.
Now VeeFriends, so it's working. This is the operating system for all my other behavior. And so I think I have a moat that most people don't have, which is, you know this, true private equity, like being smart financially and operationally, is commoditized.
Mm-hmm.
There are tens of thousands of people on earth that know what mm-hmm. to do. Hey, Chuck E. Cheese is not being run well. We'll take a former person, a partner. You know what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
The amount of people on earth that know how to leverage media and creative on CTV, TikTok, influencer, like the true craft of what I do for a living is very few. Yeah. And the ones that are, they're Mr. Beast. Mm-hmm. They're like building their own $1 trillion stuff. So I'm in a nice spot in my career. I'm young. I turn 47 in a couple weeks, and I've got 40 years of being on the field, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of one of these, I think I'll do it until the end. So I'd like to think I live to 100, maybe by 87, I'll be like, all right, maybe I'll take some foot off the pedal. But there's no foot off the pedal from who I am right now for at least 30.
Yeah.
And so 30 years of execution on the back of now where I'm at is gonna lead to a whole lot of shit that I probably can't even dream of and a lot of shit that I am dreaming of. And so that was the hypothesis of Vayner. It was two, get paid to learn. It was the recession. Mm-hmm. It was like, fuck, this is the most practical thing. Quickly behind that, build the greatest marketing company in the world as an operating system to affect the other 40 meaningful businesses I built.
Wow, that's amazing. I guess just as a follow-up, what are some interesting trends you're seeing now on social media?
The TikTokification of everything. Mm-hmm. So now the algorithm is rewarding the content from an organic standpoint that we didn't see for the last decade. So 6 years ago, hey Gary, I wanna build social media to build up my business, great. Start putting out tons of content to get followers so that you have a big enough base of followers that when you post, a good amount of people see it. Now it's make great content for the platform and the psychology of who you're trying to make it for and watch the algorithm put it in front of tons and tons of people on the merit of the creative. Mm-hmm. That's a game changer. AKA in plain English, if you want to start a coffee shop in Boston tomorrow, your first post on TikTok could get a million views and build your business for you overnight. That was unheard of. The last time this happened was Facebook fan pages in 2011, which is why Facebook became Facebook. It was always about rewarding creators with more awareness based on their creativity, not on their ad spend or ability to build a following. Mm-hmm. That was like the lightning in the bottle that would get people addicted. That's what I loved about Twitter. I'll never forget when Twitter, when I understood that Twitter had a retweet, like this is day one Twitter, I'm like, wait a minute, so you post, but wait a minute, somebody likes it, they retweet it. And retweet wasn't there. It was people doing it. I was on Twitter before the retweet button. People would see a tweet, control copy it, put RT colon and paste it.
So much work.
So, you know, like these are the trends that I've always thought about, word of mouth, awareness. Sorry about that. You know, and so stuff like that. And so, you know, I think, the biggest trend is the TikTokification of social.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. Let me know when if we have to go.
Yeah, we're wrapping. I didn't realize Mike's in my lobby. Mike flew in to work us out.
Oh no way!
I forgot.
Awesome.
So pumped. All right. Listen, I think that's good. Yeah. I think we got to go work out.
Yeah. Let's do
it. I think this was very real. This was good. As a matter of fact, everybody who's listening, I actually need your help. You know, I read Twitter the most. Can everybody just tweet? Let's use the hashtag Jose, Jose GV, J-O-S-E-G-V. Use that hashtag. I think it's specific enough. I don't think there's a lot of Jose GV hashtags. I'll find them. I know the day this is going to launch, so I'll watch for the first week. Leave your feedback, because I feel like me and Dustin sensed that this was a different kind of podcast. I feel different, and so I'm actually curious what you all felt, because that feedback may give me an insight to maybe starting a series or shifting my podcast or making new content. Thank you, my young friend. Thank you for making this such a good show.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
Let's go pump some fucking iron.
Let's do it.